What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype podcast. On today's episode, Sacramento Kings center Rashawn Holmes joins me to discuss his journey to the NBA from Bowling Green, his time with the 76ers during the Trust the Process era, and to now leading the league in field goal percentage and becoming a full-time starter with the Sacramento Kings. Rashawn, I appreciate you hopping on the line. How you doing, brother?
Oh, I'm doing well, doing well. Definitely appreciate you having me and looking forward to it.
No doubt. You know, as I mentioned, you had come from Bowling Green before you came to the NBA. And I remember, you know, working on mock drafts at the time for that. And, you know, you normally when you're thinking about guys that are going into the league, you're thinking about guys from like, I don't know, Duke, Kentucky. You know, Bowling Green doesn't jump off the map. I mean, when you were at, you know, Bowling Green at the time, what do you remember about that experience and kind of trying to get from a smaller school on the map like that to making your way towards the NBA? Did you ever think that it would be a real possibility that you would be in the league, you know, going to a smaller school like that?
I definitely always believed that I would play professionally somewhere when I went to Bowling Green, like whether it be overseas or in the NBA. I always had the belief that I would play professionally, you know, because my dream was always to play Division One, and so I felt like Division One was just one step away from playing professionally. And you know, I had a pretty good season at the end of my junior season at Bowling Green, and that's when we had a new coach there, Coach Chris Jans, and he came in, and like my work ethic just kind of changed over that summer, and I was always in the gym, always trying to get better. And I think once that season started, my last season at Bowling Green, I think that's when I realized, you know, I got a chance, you know, as I was playing well during, you know, MAC play and things of that sort. And I think what stands out to me the most is the PIT tournament, you know, for the seniors only. And I remember getting the invite to that. And once I got invited to that, I was just like, man, I'm just going to go as hard as I can here. And I got interviewed by a few NBA teams, and it just kind of went from there.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, back at the time just talking to guys and them saying that, you know, just executives and stuff, and as a potential second round guy. And you ended up going 37 overall early and kind of in the second round to Philly. You know, when you got the call that was happening, what was on your mind?
Oh, man, just, I mean, I can't describe the excitement I had. You know, I was in a hotel room with my family. And, you know, once the pick came through, you know, we were screaming, running through the hallways and things of that sort. And, you know, I just remember the next day it quickly changing from, you know, the excitement to just being really anxious and, you know, nervous to, you know, compete at the NBA level. You know, it's something I had dreamed about. And not at the moment was there, was just anxious to get to work.
So then once, you know, you go from, you know, you, like you were telling me, you were thinking about being a guy that maybe you could play overseas to getting in the league. And you talked about the, you know, the PIT tournament and everything. And you go to Philly. At the time, Philly was in the kind of the Trust the Process era before, obviously, they got to where they are now. Off the top of your head, when you think of those couple of seasons that you were in Philly, what comes to mind?
Oh, just it was funny seeing the how hard it was to win in the NBA at that time. And you know, we had a lot of guys that were trying to prove themselves in the NBA, and it just was extremely difficult to win. And I just remember, you know, grasping the respect of, you know, having to work hard every day just to give yourself an opportunity, you know, because we were working hard, you know, we were getting after it, and it was hard to win. This is hard to win in this league. And so I think just, you know, having the mindset of continuing to work and continuing to prove yourself and making sure that you're giving your all when you're on the court and making sure that the team sees you giving your all. Because one thing about the NBA is you have to work hard because the next guy might work harder than you, or, you know, you may not get the opportunities as the next guy, but, you know, you have to prove yourself in some way, especially when you're not winning. So I think just the respect level of the work I had to put in, you know, is something that I definitely learned in Philly.
You touched on guys having to prove themselves at that point. And during your time there, one of the years was the 10-72 season, and that team had guys that are proven guys in the league now. You know, you're starting. You had Robert Covington. You had Jeremy Grant, who's a most improved player of the year candidate and balling in Detroit. Christian Wood. I mean, when you look back on that collection of guys and that front court, I mean, what was it like for you guys on a day-to-day basis, just like competing against each other and whatnot for minutes too?
Oh man, it was extremely competitive and an extremely competitive environment. Like I said, you name guys that, you know, were complete gym rats. They were always in the gym, always working. And when that opportunity came, they could be ready and things of that sort. And so I just remember, you know, the practices being super competitive. You know, we would get up to tape for shoot arounds to get after each other to get some more competitive moments in. Like, it was a highly, highly competitive time. And, you know, every day we were getting after it. You know, like I said, we weren't winning many games, so we were eager to continue to work and, you know, turn things around. So, like, it was very, very competitive.
I mean, when you looked at those guys, did you know at the time, like, and you guys were all kind of younger, obviously, than you are now, but did you see, like, I'll go through the guys real quick. Did you see Robert Covington being a two-way player in this league that would get a nice contract and a starter?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I think Rob, you know, he always had a gift on the defensive end of the floor. And he put time in. He was always in the gym in Philly, working on his shot, working on ball handling, things of that sort to continue to get better. And, you know, he understood defense was what was going to keep him on the floor. And he added a three-point shot. And, you know, to be that 3-and-D player, you know, that's something that's highly valuable in the league. So definitely think we all saw it, you know, even from that time.
And what about the other guys like Jeremy Grant and Christian Wood? Both of those guys got paid pretty well this offseason. I mean, what were your thoughts on what they could become during Philly to what they are now?
Like I said, complete gym rats. You know, they, like Jeremy, an insane athlete, you know, can always put in time on his game, working on ball handling, working on shooting. And, you know, like I said, those guys are always in the gym. C. Wood was cut I don't know how many times, and you couldn't keep him out the gym. You know, so I think just the seasons they're having is just a testament to all their hard work building up, plus the opportunity meeting. And they were prepared, they were ready, and they were ready to grab the opportunity by the horn and become the players they knew they could be.
And for you, you talked about learning about how hard it is to win in the league during that year, especially, you know, when you went 10-72. I mean, what was it like just collectively, you know, even in the locker room for you guys and you for yourself, you know, coming into the league? I'm sure you have your own expectations about trying to impact winning, and it was obviously a tough year. I mean, for you guys, how did you deal with it?
I mean, it definitely was a tough losing. You know, a lot of guys, you know, coming into that locker room wasn't used to losing. There was a lot of young guys. And so to lose that much, you know, we definitely had to keep each other's spirits up. So we were a really close team, very friendly. Like, guys like T.J. McConnell really kept the team together, you know, just being his hilarious self. You know, Isaiah Cannon was there. You know, he was a personality. And Jeremy, like you said, you know, everybody, just kind of, we just kind of kept the mood as light as possible, you know, knowing that we all were going through mentally with the losing.
You know, just the other thing too, you guys, you had Sam Hinkie as your exec, and I mean, he got a lot of flack around the league. You know, people thought, like, you know, the team was tanking and whatnot based on the construction of the roster and a lot of the young guys, like you were saying, and, you know, obviously that 10-72 year. I mean, from your perspective, I appreciate a player's perspective on it more than anything. You know, you deal with Sam. Just curious what you thought of him as an executive and, you know, what he was trying to build there during that time.
I mean, Sam, for me, you know, he gave a lot of guys a chance to prove themselves in the NBA. You know, I don't know if I get drafted to any other team other than Philly at that time, if I'm able to play the games that I play at the point in time of what I was in my career. You know, I don't know if any other situation could have worked out like Philly did. So I feel like he gave just a lot of young players a chance to prove themselves. And, you know, a lot of guys need time and a lot of guys need development. And I think that's one thing that Sam was banking on, was developing guys and, you know, getting guys prepared to play and, you know, getting the most out of them. And, you know, I just think he had an awesome talent in that way.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess just, you know, wrapping up on the Philly time that you had there, by the time you were heading out, it was when Fultz came in, Markel Fultz, and Ben Simmons was starting his rookie year too. You know, with Markel, I remember watching him. We had him at the Jordan Brand Classic practices in Brooklyn, and you could tell the kid had talent when he was fully healthy. I mean, for you, just go, you know, being his teammate and seeing what he endured in the start of his career with that injury, and, you know, to try to work his way back now, you know, good for him that he got paid in Orlando. What did you see from your vantage point just with Markel during the very start of his career in that aspect?
Just determination. Determination in one word, if I can sum it up. Like, no matter what Markel was going through or what people were saying about him, he knew what he could be. He was always determined to get to what he was, get through his injuries, and, you know, become a, you know, the NBA player, NBA starting point guard that he could be. So, you know, he always wanted to. He's another one of those guys who was always in the gym. And me and Markel were close in his time in Philly. You know, I wish, you know, he would inspire me to be in the gym more, you know, how much he wanted to be in the gym. So he just one of those guys who wanted to continue to work and, you know, continue to get better. And, you know, like Vic said, glad he got paid in Orlando. And I know he's going to come back stronger from the injury now.
And, you know, like you touched on for yourself individually, Philly gave you that opportunity that you didn't know if you would have got from other teams. And I mean, you know, like I said, when I was doing the mock drafts for those, that draft class and talking with execs, you know, yeah, I think he would have gone somewhere in the second round. But Philly also had a ton of second round picks that year. You know, they were kind of doing what Sam Presti's doing now in OKC. They were stockpiling picks. And obviously they took you with that. For you, you got to establish yourself as a rotation guy. And then, you know, you went to go to Phoenix for a year. And even that year, too, was like, I think it was like 19-63 or something that year. It was a short stint before you went to SAC and took off. But I did want to ask you, because it was a part of your journey, you know, what was that year like for you as well when you were in Phoenix and, you know, you were playing like 70 plus games that year? What, as you continue to establish yourself as a player, what did you learn from that experience and took away from it just behind the scenes that one year in Phoenix?
I think the one year in Phoenix was mostly about me, you know, establishing myself as like a solid NBA player. Like, you know, I feel like I showed flashes in Philadelphia, but, you know, never really did anything consistently. And I think through Phoenix, like you said, playing 70 games that year, having a consistent role as the backup big, you know, it really kind of solidified me as, you know, a solid big in the NBA. And, you know, I could, like you said, I went from Phoenix and got the contract in Sacramento. And now it's time to show that I've gotten better in Sacramento. But I think the time in Phoenix, you know, taught me how to be a professional mostly, like be a pro, how to take care of my body, things of that sort. And just solidified me as, that, you know, like I said, NBA player, solid NBA player.
When you left Phoenix and were going to Sacramento, you know, I was curious before transitioning to that, you know, like another podcast I had a former Bull, Paul Shirley, on, and he was talking about the 03-04 team with like Scott Skiles. And he was joking that there was actually like a pamphlet that went around in the locker room trashing him, that he didn't know how who to play and things like that. It's very easy for there like to be stuff that goes on behind the scenes on bad teams. I mean, I was just curious from when you were in Philly and Phoenix, if I don't, you know, obviously I certainly don't think a pamphlet was passed around, you know, different era, but what was it just like behind the scenes with those group of guys in the locker room?
I mean, it was really a lot of funny people and a lot of like funny guys on those teams, honestly. So it was a lot of different personalities. So it was all in fun, like all kind of, you know, let's kind of like try to pull together, let's keep our spirits up type thing, like I said. And it was crazy because I know like a lot of fans, you know, they would come at us crazy, especially in Philly. You know, Philly fans are ruthless. And so it was more like I said, because there were so many young guys, it was like our first taste of like the NBA kind of. So we were, all like taken aback and kind of like joking about it, and like a lot of laughter behind the scenes.
It's funny you mentioned that, because like even I remember, I don't know if you ever saw the story I wrote, but Dennis Smith, when he was with the Knicks, told me about a time he was getting in an Uber, and the Uber driver was just bashing the Knicks, and he was bashing like Dennis Smith, and I guess he didn't realize that Dennis Smith was in the car. And like, you know, you were telling me about the Philly fans, and obviously, you know, there was that time like Jahlil got, you know, into an altercation or whatever you want to call it with one of those fans. I mean, what were they saying to you guys that, you know, because, yeah, they're definitely passionate. I've been there for road playoff games, you know, when I was covering the Nets for The Athletic. What do you remember about any of those things that they would say?
Oh, man, it would be some of everything that I can't really say myself, you know, but I'd be, you know, win some games, you know, you get paid such and such, get off your set, so and so, you know, thing. I mean, they was, I mean, like I said, ruthless. Like, we would probably get down, like, probably down like 10 in like the first or second quarter, man. The Bulls would come raining down, like, let a team go on an 8-0, 10-0 run or something like that. And then they going to let you know. They going to let you know for sure.
Well, you then, you know, kind of moved on from that, and, you know, you touched on Phoenix as well. So then you go to Sacramento, like we were talking about, and when you sign there as a free agent, you know, you're in the second year of your 2-year deal. You know, Sacramento, I tell you this, man, I've never seen a team that loves centers more than Vlade Divac. So you were definitely there at a good time to get the bag. I mean, if I'm just being real with you. And so one of the things I was curious of is when you went there, you know, Sacramento has not been a playoff team for a while. And, you know, when that happens, you know, they get a reputation. I'm sure you knew going there, like, they kind of had a reputation as far as an organization. So I was curious, before you signed there, one, just what was your view of the Sacramento Kings at the time when you were signing and made you go there instead of other options that you had?
I think, like, about Sacramento, like you said, they hadn't been to the playoffs in a while and things of that sort. So I was really unsure. You know, I was really unsure. But one thing about Sacramento is how hard they pursued me. Like, from the opening of free agency, like, they made it clear that they wanted me to be in Sacramento and I could be a part of this team. I could help this team. And so I think that's the one thing that kind of won me over more than anything, was just how overwhelmingly they pursued me and made sure they knew that I knew that I could be a big part of this team. And so I think that's kind of what swayed me.
Do you remember at the time kind of who else was in the mix?
I can't really remember. I know that they signed Dwayne Dedmon and brought me in as well to kind of fortify the bench and things of that sort. But other people in the mix, I can't really tell.
Oh, no, I meant for yourself, like other teams. Like, you know, when you're in free agency, you know, other teams that were looking at you.
Oh, other teams. Yeah, I had interest from a few different teams. I'm sure I know I believe the Bulls were there and things of that sort. And that's one team I remember off the top of my head. But yeah, we were talking to a few teams at the time.
So then, you know, they talked to you about, like you were saying to me, about having a chance to have kind of a real significant role there. And I mean, you've pretty much become, for the first time in your career since going to Sacramento, a full-time starter at center. And, you know, like I was touching on in the open, as of right now, you know, I'm not trying to jinx you, but just it is what it is. You're leading the league in field goal percentage right now. And in those 2 years since you've been in SAC, you know, it's pretty much about, you know, 12 and a half, 8 boards and a block and a half a game. So, I mean, for you, what has this experience in Sacramento been like for you thus far during your time with the Kings?
Oh, man, it's been extremely fun, you know, extremely fun. Gotten the opportunity to kind of prove myself and show myself here, become a starting center in the NBA, kind of solidify myself as that. And, you know, I've enjoyed every moment of it. You know, I've just the opportunity to get to play on a nightly basis, you know, and understand what my role is, understand what I need to bring, and trying to bring that consistently every night. You know, I've really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the process and, you know, enjoyed playing in Sacramento, like, to the fullest.
What's it like off the court in Sacramento?
Oh, man, the fans show nothing but love. Show nothing but love in Sacramento. I mean, from the moment before I even got to Sacramento, you know, on social media and things of that sort, like, the fans just show nothing but love. You know, going to businesses, they showing love. You know, it's just all love. They really love the Kings, and they show support for the Kings no matter what's going on. And that's one thing I can definitely say about Sacramento. Like, the fans show absolutely nothing but love out here.
Well, I'm glad to hear that in that aspect. And, you know, with that in mind, you touched on it when we started talking about the transition of Sac and the reputation that they had, that, you know, they hadn't been to the playoffs in a while. I mean, I'm sure you noticed as well as anybody, they haven't been there since 2006. So I'm curious, with the way you guys are playing, you know, right now, kind of hovering close to that, like, 500 mark, what do you think of this team currently as constructed and what you guys can do this season?
I mean, I believe that the playoffs are definitely the goal. You know, with the talent we have and the roster we have, we definitely feel like the playoffs is the goal. We want to make the playoffs, and that's what we are focused on. That's what the goal we've talked about and the goal we've had. So that's what we want to do.
Do you think what have you been impressioned so far of the team thus far? I mean, to this point, you know, as we're getting towards, you know, trade deadline going to be about 5 weeks away, and, you know, you're heading towards eventually the All-Star break. Where do you think you guys are right now towards accomplishing that goal of trying to get to the playoffs?
I think we're too inconsistent at the moment. You know, we've had highs and lows already in the season, and I think we have to, you know, just find the level of consistency to be that playoff team. One thing, playoff teams show a level of consistency, especially, you know, the good teams, the top tier teams. And I think that's our next step in order to get closer to accomplishing that goal. Just show consistency night in and night out.
How's it been for you playing for Luke Walton? You know, his dad obviously was a pretty notable center back in his day, and a guy that had a lot of impact in the league as well. I'm talking about Luke now, that, you know, winning with the Lakers and whatnot. What has it been like for you playing for him, and if he's done anything in particular to help your game individually?
It's been great. It's been great. One thing about Luke, you know, he's a player's coach, and his line of communication is always wide open. You know, he's always, you know, talking and communicating things that he needs to see. You know, things that I need to get better at, things that I need to bring more of, you know. So for me, that's what I need. That's the type of coach I need, is a coach that's going, you know, always be open with me, always communicate, always telling me, you know, what I need to bring more of, and, you know, when I'm slacking or when I need to, you know, just do something else to help the team. You know, his line of communication is always open. So that's something I always appreciate.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I mean, on the court, a lot of times, you know, chances are we're going to see in a pick and roll of some kind with De'Aaron Fox or maybe Tyrese Halliburton. I'll start with De'Aaron. What are your thoughts on his game right now? Is he still a young guy in the league in his third year?
He's playing at an all-star level, I feel like. You know, the growth he's shown on the court, you know, as well as off the court as a leader, being vocal, you know, leading the team, you know, taking over down the stretch as he's been doing. You know, he's been bringing an all-star level type game to the team. And, you know, I feel like that's something he should be recognized for.
Well, I guess we're going to find out soon enough on him for the all-star game. I mean, you know, he was kind of saying, though, that he didn't seem like it made a good idea. And he's not the only one. There's other people, like other stars, that have kind of questioned whether there should be an all-star game, but certainly seems like it's going to happen. So we'll see what shakes out there. But the other guy I touched on for you, you know, Tyrese Halliburton, you know, who's become one of the better rookies in the league. I think when he went to Sacramento at first, people kind of questioned how he would fit with, you know, De'Aaron Fox kind of in a backcourt. But, you know, we've seen 2 point guard kind of lineups before. What are your early impressions so far of Tyrese in his rookie season?
Oh, man, this a high-level IQ. You know, he knows where to be, and he knows where to put others on the floor. You know, he kind of commands the floor when he's out there. And, you know, he's very, very smart player, very skilled, you know, has a great floater game, you know, that keeps, you know, defenders guessing in that pick and roll. You know, he can, you know, fake the pass, you know, get the pass to you, you know, he, no looks, you know, he knows how to pass the ball, move the ball, and make quick decisions, you know, so he's just a very, very high-level player.
And for you, obviously, it's an important year. Just one, as you talked about, in continuing to show that consistency and being a starter, you guys are trying to compete for the playoffs. For you also, you're going to be a free agent at the end of the year. I was curious, what are your thoughts on becoming an unrestricted free agent after the year?
You know, it's going to be interesting, you know, I'm focused kind of just on the season at the moment. You know, it's hard for me to, you know, to think beyond, you know, the next game, especially in season, you know, but, you know, the business side is the business side, and everything is going to get taken care of on that side, you know, after the season's done, and I'm going to have to focus on that after, because, you know, it's obviously tough to, like I said, to think past the next game.
Mentality-wise, you talk about, you know, focusing on the next game. Being that it is obviously a big year for you in a lot of ways, both individually as a free agent and collectively with you guys trying to get to the playoffs for the first time since 2006, as I touched on, did you do anything different going into this season to prepare for it at all?
I think the main thing was just making sure I had my things in place to take care of my body throughout the season. You know, where I wanted to just give the most high-level performance for as long as I could, make sure I got the most out of my body, and really just take advantage of, you know, just things for my mental stability, you know, like yoga, making sure, you know, meditation, things of that sort, you know, making sure my mental is together, and because I think that's more important throughout the NBA season, is making sure you keep your mind straight, your mind focused on goals and the things you need to accomplish, so I think those are a couple of things I definitely took more serious, you know, especially this past offseason.
By the end of the season, what are your goals that you hope to have accomplished both individually and collectively?
I think collectively, like I said, just to make the playoffs. You know, that's what we feel like we should be. That's what we feel like, you know, the talent level we have. That's a goal that's accomplishable. And so that's something that we want to do. And I think for me individually, I just want to show, like I said, you know, I'm a legit starting center. You know, I'm one of the best centers in the league, I feel like. And as I get more consistent, and I have a lot more to show. So I just want to, you know, just show that, like I said, I'm one of the best two-way centers in this league for sure. And just want to continue to showcase that and put the NBA on notice.
And I know you touched on, you know, focusing on each game, but when you do become a free agent, I was curious what things you would look for. Because, I mean, you've been a free agent before, like when you went to Sacramento. Like, if you had a checklist of things that you would like, what would they be?
Definitely just, you know, I want to be able to take care of my family. You know, I've been putting in work in the NBA for 6 years now, you know, doing a lot, doing, you know, everything I can. And, you know, I just want to be in a position to take care of my family, put my family in the best position. You know, that means a lot to me, as well as being in a position to compete. You know, want to be in a position to compete, you know, want to win championships at some point in my career. And so that's always something that's in my mindset as well.
Well, Rashawn, I certainly appreciate you hopping on the line with us here on the Hoopside podcast. And it's been pretty cool to see from where you started to where you're at right now. I do wish you continued best of luck as you go through your journey and the rest of the season with Sacramento. Thanks again for hopping on the line with me.
Yes, sir. Definitely appreciate you having me. And thanks for taking your time.
Oh, my pleasure. And I also want to thank everyone for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops High Podcast with guest appearances from players such as Rashawn Holmes, coaches, executives, and media members, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. You can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter, at Mike A. Scotto. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.